Welcome to Built in the Bluegrass, a podcast dedicated to cool stuff made in Kentucky. We want to share with you how it was made, why it was made, and the story behind it. And now, here's your host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Built in the Bluegrass, where we are going to take a little step back in time somewhat today and talk a little bit about some printing presses and things of that nature from yesterday. He's going to explain it a lot more interesting detail than I could start us off with today. So I have with me Nick Bouty from right here in Louisville, Kentucky with Hound Dog Press, who is going to explain, you know, a little bit about what it is they do that's different than just every printing press that's on the corner. So Nick, welcome to the show. Glad to have you with us today.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Good deal. So to get started, Nick, just, you know, if you would talk a little bit about your business in particular from the printing presses, et cetera, you know, what it is that you do, why it's different, how it's unique, and tell us a little bit about your background. You know, how'd you get into this, et cetera? And we'll go into some particulars, you know, as much as anyone listening, you know, may have a history of this, you know, just keep us up to date on, you know, things that we may not know or some historical context. If we need to know that, by all means, bring them to our attention. But yeah, just give us a brief background on yourself and your company.
Great. I appreciate it. So I could sort of trace back the beginning of my interest in this process to college. I was a fine art major with a focus in printmaking. And I started doing wood engravings back then. And wood engraving is how you illustrated newspapers and magazines before the invention of photography. So that old historic process introduced me to what I do now, which is letterpress printing. Letterpress is a specific process dating from Johann Gutenberg in 1440, running all the way up through Benjamin Franklin and even into the 1960s. It eventually died out in the 1960s to offset printing, because it became cheaper and faster, you know, anything else in modern society. Fortunately for me, there's been a resurgence and respect for the letterpress process. I do a lot of wedding invitations, business cards, and stationery. And so what you get is a high-end product. It's not flat printing. You can feel the impression into the paper. You hand somebody a letterpress printed card or invitation, they're going to notice that it's something different and something special.
Cool. So as far as the printing of that, you do that all in your shop here locally? Is it something that you can outsource somewhere? Is it all done by you?
It's all done by me and a couple of employees that I've had over the years. I have printing equipment. Presses range from 1860 to 1960, and everything is produced right here in the shop.
Cool. So you don't have any, so none of this is new. Like, how do you get parts? How do you, well, before we get into that, a little bit, you know, as far as the press, the actual process in which you go through, tell us a little bit what it's like. So if I want one of these products, I think what I heard then was, you know, this is something that's a little more high quality. This isn't just getting something to print out on your printer at home or even going to your, you know, Minuteman press on every corner, that it does this. This is unique to a higher quality, higher standard. Walk me through what that looks like and why this is unique and why this is special, you think.
So it's definitely a process that's not for everyone. If you are looking for a quick print, some inexpensive flyers you want to hand out, or even if you're going to a trade show and you're going to be going through 5,000 business cards, you probably don't want to use me. But if you have a high-end product or a high-end business yourself and you want to represent yourself with good quality, handing somebody a letterpress printed business card will be and hopefully could be something that would separate you from the crowd in that stack of business cards. Maybe this would stand out a little bit. Okay, so you as a client would come to me with an idea and I want a business card. We'll talk about paper. We'll talk about colors. We'll talk about impression. We'll have those custom design conversations, because everything I do is custom. You don't choose from A, B, or C with me. We'll start from scratch and build it up to, you know, to the final product, so that each piece that leaves my shop is pretty unique. And in regards to, I don't have a whole lot of repeats, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So explain letterpress to us. That was where I was going. Like, if, you know, is this one of those old machines that it's on a roller and then you plug in the letter A, the letter B, the letter C, the letter D, and then you stamp it out? Like, how does this operate?
Yeah, totally. So a little older than that. I think you're referring to the mimeograph that they used to use in schools, right? To print off copies in the office. No, so we're talking about handset metal type that Johann Gutenberg invented in the year 1440. So if you're a real traditionalist, you can come in and we can talk about the collection of metal type that I have, and we can set letter by letter. We do that upside down and backwards to create a form. that form gets locked into the press, and then we're printing one color at a time, essentially one card at a time. The modern application, though, has changed a little bit. In the 1860s, they invented photo engraving, which is a photographic process that etched metal, magnesium, zinc, or copper plates, and then you printed from those plates. So that's how newspapers and magazines were done. Today's modern technology and version of that, I'm using a polymer plate, but it's still photo engraved, but instead of harsh chemicals, we're photo engraving plastic with warm water. So I'm able to take your digitally created logo and create a plastic plate that then gets mounted to a base and then gets locked up into my 1940 printing press. So from that point on, the process is exactly the same as it's always been, but just getting the image to plate has been modernized slightly.
And then you're able to, I guess, keep that in the form. You keep it in the back of the shop if somebody wants to print it again, or do you, how long does it last, I guess? Could it do a million copies? Is it something that, people can go back to if they want it again? For example, the business cards, you recreate it each time. There's a difference between this and a 3D printer. So just curious how it might work.
Once the plates are made, I hold on to them, and they do last quite a bit. Now, if they sit around for years, they get a little brittle and they kind of curl up over time. But the material isn't terribly expensive. I have to make a piece of film and then I have to go through the plate. So if you're talking about just a business card, the material cost there is minimal, like maybe $20. So if I'm misstoring your plate or if I've lost it in the shuffle here, it's not a big deal for me to recreate a new one. We're not talking about a brass or copper die anymore. This is a relatively inexpensive plate.
So are there multiple, how many of these traditional letterpresses shops are there? Is there one in most states? Is this something that's unique to where there's only a few around the country? Is this a viable business for a lot of areas? How many of you are there, I guess?
Well, it's a good question. I think it's always in flux, right? We experienced the height of our process about 5 years ago. And at that time, every major city in every state of the country had multiple printers that were doing what I do at various levels. You've got people that are in their garage that are hobby printers that are doing projects for themselves or family. And then you've got bigger commercial letterpress shops that are doing work more like myself in the sense that we're running business cards and stationery on more high volume basis. So there's a huge range there between those two businesses. Then also you also have this other aspect of it. I've got another friend here in town, Brad Vetter. He's a letterpress printer, but he's also a designer. So he's bringing in the letterpress equipment and processed into his digitally created designs and using that for all sorts of promotional pieces, from murals and banners to posters still himself. So there's only three of us in town that I think we're making a living off of letterpress that I know of. But I know that there's a handful of other folks that do have this in their garage and their basement, and then you can still have fun, on the weekends. Whether or not it's viable, if you want to support your family and pay your bills, that's like anything else. It's tough. It's a business after all. I'm not going to be a millionaire ever, but I get to come to a fun place to work every day.
So if you're operating something that's 150 years old, who works on those? Are you working on them yourself? Is this just like working on old cars where you have to put it back together? You can with whatever you can get your hands on?
Or yeah, there's a little bit of that. I like to say that it's been MacGyvered. Now, anyone older than anyone who grew up in the 90s or 80s would know what I'm talking about. But I've got some things duct taped with some safety pins. I'm not going to lie. But this equipment was made to last. It's cliche, but things today are disposable. They're meant, if they break, you throw them away and you go buy a new one. This was not how these machines were made. So as long as I keep them dry and well oiled, they will outlive my life, no question. If something does break, I do have to figure it out. Either I fix it or I have a machinist that I know. I have a blacksmith friend that I know in town. And then there's a whole network of folks that have warehouses with the stuff stored in that are recreating parts, having things machined that break often, or at least like a junkyard as cars would be. You can pull parts off of old presses, I have a couple of old presses just in case I have to, if I need a part, I can pull it off of there as well. But we are kind of on our own when it comes to having to fix these things.
Yeah. So it's definitely a different product than your average print shop. So, if you're not coming from a value perspective, you mentioned high end, what is your, what is your sell to people? Are you just saying, hey, listen, I can give you a high quality thing if you want to represent yourself in such a light that's this? Who's the typical people coming to you? Is it, Brown-Forman when they're having an event? Is it a country club? Is it people for wedding invitations? Like, why do I want something this fancy? Why wouldn't I just go get the cheapest thing out there?
And you can, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't judge, But if you are looking for something that's different, more unique, a little bit more special, obviously I can deliver on that. My clients range. I work with a lot of just individuals, one-off people that wanted a nice stationery to write letters to their friends or making a gift for somebody. I'll do a one-off wedding poster, for the bride and groom that's given to you, from the best man or maid of honor, a lot of those. But then yes, Brown-Forman, Bullet, Castle and Key. I'm going to forget most of my clients right now, but just about all of those beer distillery companies, some of the larger corporations in town I've worked with, one capacity or another. It's not necessarily always an invite for a special event. It's not always just a business card for a certain team. It's a little bit of everything, which kind of keeps my days pretty interesting.
Nice. So then, as far as a size and scale of this thing, it's probably a little tough to scale up whenever you've only got so many presses. You'd have to keep them pretty busy. Is a big order shut you down for a few days?
Well, it's funny you ask. This year, I've had two of the largest orders I've ever had in my entire career. And coming off of 2020, I can't tell you how thankful I am. This time last year, I wasn't sure if I'd be able to survive or I'd be here this time. But two big clients came through, and yes, they basically shut my press down for 3 to 4 months. I did 10,000 posters for a Maker's Mark project that were 3 and 4 colors each, 4 different designs. So that on my Vandercooks, that project took the better part of the entire summer with 2 people printing almost full time every day because we're just printing off one at a time. It's a very slow process, as I mentioned. But I did, in fact, increase production this year as well. I moved spaces in 2020. I bought a building in Smoketown. I renovated it in 2019 and moved in 2020. So it was a strange time to move. But with this new space, I brought in a new press, which is faster and...
By new, what do you mean new?
I mean 1960.
Okay, there we go. So
it's called a Heidelberg's windmill. Heidelberg still makes printing presses, but modern digital ones. This was their top-of-the-line 1960 windmill that they didn't have to improve upon. They stopped making presses at that point. But what that windmill did for me was allow me to move from printing maybe, let's say, per hour a business card. I might be able to get a few hundred done, maybe 300-400 cards if I'm working fast, hand-feeding that, to printing 5,000 impressions an hour on a windmill. But the best part is you don't lose the quality. You're still getting the impression into the paper you want. You're still getting quality ink coverage, still able to feed the thicker stocks that people like. The advantage is that now an order for thousands and thousands of things wouldn't take me weeks on end. It would really just take me a few days or a week, depending on my schedule. So I've kind of like stepped into the 21st century, I feel like.
Sure. So when, if I don't understand printing presses and some of the stuff that you've, been mentioning here is kind of foreign to me whenever you start throwing those words around, when am I going to see your product? You mentioned the Maker's Mark poster. You mentioned, where will I see something? A Maker's Mark poster is a great example. Like they do a special project or they want a commemorative label that they want to go on. I'm assuming that that's the type of thing that you put together. Where are some places we might've seen your stuff, recently?
Well, I do have my own retail space and I sell online. So there's a good chance you've probably seen some cards floating around town. I do a lot of art fairs. And I was represented in a few, retail shops around Louisville over the years. And I'm carried in retail shops all over the state of Kentucky as well. Big projects like that. I mean, I did that one for them. If you buy the special limited release bottle, you would get a poster. A few years back, I did the same with West Sixth that they were.
So it's not the label; it's the poster that went along with the promotion.
Exactly.
Okay, I thought you said it was the labels that were going on them also. So.
Oh no, just the poster. The labels would have been probably out of my capabilities, just because the quantities there would be pretty hard. And Maker's Mark is very specific; they all have their own, branded paper and branded design where they kind of got to stick to all of that. So they're not going to change that up as much as the extra stuff that comes along with it in my experience now. But honestly, you might've just gotten a wedding invitation in the mail and didn't realize it. Someone handed you a business card, just didn't realize it. Anytime you feel anything with that impression in the paper, is a 99% chance that it came from my shop, since I'm basically the only one doing it.
Nice. So you mentioned that, I think you, what year did you all start your business, or did you?
Full-time 2008, but we toyed around with the idea a few years earlier than that.
Okay. So since 2008, you've been in business. Are you a Kentucky kid, a Louisville guy? Like, is that how you ended up here, or what made you come to Louisville?
I think like half the people I meet in this town, love brought me here. My wife is from Louisville, and when it was time to settle down, this place just made a lot of sense. I grew up not far away, upriver in northern Kentucky, across from Cincinnati. So yeah, I'm a Kentucky boy, born and raised. Went to the University of Kentucky, where I met my wife. We moved up to Brooklyn, New York for a few years, and that's really where I found my love and passion for this process. While there, I worked for a third-generation printer, letterpress printer. So he taught me how to print, how to run the press. Then I spent 2 years at a museum recreating letterpress. So it was a 19th century reproduction replica of a shop that would have been in the waterfront in lower Manhattan in the 1860s. You know, we're talking about some of the first neighborhood that was electrified by, you know, was the neighborhood that this museum was in. That just taught me everything about the history, and I just fell in love with the process. And it was that time my wife and I decided, you know, we wanted to have a family in New York. We're not going to be able to do it there because we're not independently wealthy. We're going to move back to Louisville, where we had her family and my family just very nearby. So that's what sort of brought us here. But also, there wasn't anyone doing what I wanted to do the way I wanted to do it in Louisville. So I also felt like it was an open market.
Cool. So as far as your business goes, you know, when you've told us quite a bit about, you know, the level of touch that it takes, and, you know, the significance of, you know, having something that's that high of a quality, you know, what's something about your business, the, you know, the process of just printing in general, maybe it's something you learned from, you know, the people that you worked with up in New York, but you wish more people knew about the industry, because this is frankly not something that a lot of people probably think about on an everyday basis, unless their daughter's getting married, or they're, you know, getting married themselves, or they're having something that they, you know, they're in the luxury business, or, you know, this is the people that you're talking to is probably a few times in their life, or there are a few people in their respective industry. So, you know, what's something you wish more people knew about, A, this printing, and B, your business in general?
Well, I guess I'm lucky. I feel like I've gotten this far by word of mouth alone. And Louisville's been a great market for me, and a great place that supports local business, you know, supports the weird local business on top of it. Because like you said, you know, this is a very unique process that's not for everyone. I think it's important just when you think about the aspect of everything in our daily lives, like where we're spending our dollar, right? And I don't want to get, you know, too far down this rabbit hole, but, you know, there's only so many things we can control in our life. And I think Louisville is such a unique place because people think about where they're spending their money and who they're supporting. You know, yeah, I might be slightly more expensive than going to certainly a Kinko's or another digital print shop like that. But, you know, you're supporting me, a local guy. I'm keeping my money here in Louisville. And you're just making like overall our whole community just stronger, I think, for supporting each other.
Yeah. So the independent businesses, you know, I'm a small business guy myself, and that's exactly right. We want to see people who support, stay local, you know, sure, grow your business and do your thing and make your money. But, you know, we do like to see it being kept local. And that's, you know, one of the things that, you know, what do they say? An expert is someone who's more than 100 miles away, you know, and we want to make it, you know, put attention to the fact that a lot of times these experts are in your backyard, these people that can help you do these things that, you know, you didn't think were going to be able to be done, or being right down the street in Smoketown, or, you know, whatever, you know, part of town or part of the state that, you know, has very capable and competent people producing great things. So that's what we want to draw attention to. All right. So as far as getting the word out, you know, as you mentioned, you know, word of mouth, you know, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you about your products, or if anyone wanted to use you for your services, how do we look you up? How do we find you? I mean, I'm sure we could just Google Hound Dog Press, but outside of that, you know, how can we get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I got a website, hounddogpress.com. You can shoot me an email, which is just nick@hounddogpress.com. Give me a call. Come by the shop. See it in person.
Where's your shop located? I know you said Smoketown, but what address?
Yeah, I'm at 785 South Shelby Street. And I just moved in here in 2020. Like I said, I haven't had a chance to have a grand opening or anything. So haven't been able to show all my clients the new digs, but I've got it set up. You walk inside, you feel like you're stepping back in time 100 years. Kind of a functioning museum up front with production in the back. It's definitely worth seeing in person. And I do encourage people to come by. I can talk until I'm blue in the face. And you guys probably, again, like you said, you might not fully understand what I'm talking about. But this is such a tactile and visual process that I can almost guarantee when you come in, you're going to fall in love with it. That's a bold statement, but...
No, I understand what you're saying. It's something that's of yesteryear, and it's something that a certain level of quality that, I mean, I get every now and then when I talk to certain people that are of a certain stature or something, they send me one of those handwritten notes on their letterhead that's got it stamped at the top with their name, for example. And it's like, huh, well, this is awful fair, a thank you note or something like that. I've seen some of those. I don't see as many business cards, I don't think, but you know, there's who knows how much business cards are going to be around anymore now that
everything. Well, I think I'd have to argue they're making a comeback, to be honest. I agree with you. A few years ago, it seemed like everybody was just touching phones or whatever. But that exchange has become so cold, you know? And I've had a lot of clients come back to me afterwards and just saying how important it was to hand somebody something physical and the impact that that made, you know, for the better. So I hope, I've got hope that the business cards aren't going anywhere. They're only just going to get a little bit nicer, maybe.
Yeah, well, sounds like you make a very high quality one, which is good to hear. All right, guys, thanks for everyone for listening today for another episode of Built in the Bluegrass. Look at that word fumble there. Nick Bouty from Hound Dog Press. Thanks for being with us today, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, appreciate it.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Built in the Bluegrass. We hope you're leaving this episode with a better understanding of the cool stuff made in Kentucky. If you haven't done so already, make sure you're subscribed to the show. This way you'll get notified as new episodes become available. Until next time.